Welcome to TechNote on WPSU. I'm Min Shen. Marjorie Miller is a writer and editor for Penn State's College of Health and Human Development. A two-time cancer survivor, she was diagnosed with leukemia at the age of 12 and with breast cancer at 26. Through genetic testing, she discovered she has Li-Fraumeni syndrome, a mutation that increases her chance of getting cancers. Now in her 30s, Miller has gone through chemotherapy, a double mastectomy, breast reconstruction surgeries, and lives a healthy lifestyle while coping with the long-lasting effects of her cancers. She volunteers and speaks about her personal experience to raise awareness for cancer survivors. This year's National Cancer Survivors Day is this Sunday. Marjorie Miller, welcome to Take Note.
Thank you for having me.
You were 12 when you had leukemia. In addition to having gone through 3 years of chemotherapy for it, leukemia also meant that your childhood was in a way interrupted. You wrote in a blog post that we have to cancel my bat mitzvah, which was probably the most heartbreaking part of my experience. How do you remember having cancer at a young age?
It's funny because I think while I was going through it, I didn't think too much about it. I kind of just went through the daily motions. You know, I was concerned with hanging out with friends and going shopping and fashion and all that stuff. And for my seventh grade year of school, I was homeschooled so that I could receive my treatment. So I missed a whole year of school. And I felt like mostly I was just missing out with friends and missing out on everything that was going on in seventh grade. So I didn't think too much about my actual health and what was happening. I knew what was happening, but it wasn't until years later that I realized, you know, what I really went through. And I think it's just hard to process as a kid, and I think it's hard to process going through it every day. So it took me a few years later to really think about what I had been through.
Did you realize how serious it was?
I think at the time, you know, being 12, you're kind of at a weird age where you're still a kid, but you're also beginning to understand things about the real world. And I think I did understand how serious it was. I think I just kind of maybe didn't want to really believe it. And in my heart, deep down, I just really thought I was going to be fine.
And I wonder, did having leukemia affect your reaction of being diagnosed with breast cancer later in your life at the age of 26?
Yes, it was the most shocking thing to be 26 and to be told that you have breast cancer. My first thought, and everybody in my family, their first thought was, again? Like, are you serious? How can this be happening again? And, you know, it took a while before I got the genetic testing, and we made some connections between the leukemia and the breast cancer and then ultimately the Li-Fraumeni syndrome diagnosis. But it was really heartbreaking. Even though I had leukemia at age 12, you know, I had been cancer-free for, 17 years. And I really did believe my life was just moving forward, and I didn't really think I was going to get sick again. I mean, I was always scared of getting sick, and I always had it in the back of my mind. Because once you have cancer, that fear doesn't really go away. But I really did believe I was going to be fine. So getting that diagnosis, you know, it brought me back to when I was 12. It was a very different cancer and a very different diagnosis, but it kind of brought up all those memories that I had from being a kid.
It must have been hard.
Yeah, it was very hard.
And your diagnosis of breast cancer was in 2011, if that's
yes.
right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that was just 2 months after you were engaged with your now husband, Sean.
Yes.
And although the risk of women being diagnosed with breast cancer in their 20s or 30s is actually very real, I don't think it's often something that people talked about or on the minds of those women as they start their careers, start their families. What was it like receiving your diagnosis during that stage in your life?
Well, it was a little bit crazy because I was diagnosed with leukemia, you know, before my bat mitzvah. And then here I was, we were planning our wedding and I got the breast cancer diagnosis. So it was really hard for me to understand why this was happening at these big milestones and changes in my life. And yeah, at 26, planning our wedding, that was not something I would have ever imagined. And I had heard of breast cancer. Obviously everyone's heard of it, but it never occurred to me that it could ever be something that would happen to me, at least at the age of 26. So very quickly, our wedding planning turned into wedding planning while dealing with breast cancer. And that became the idea behind the blog that I started back then, Pink and Pearls, just to kind of document my breast cancer journey and also my wedding planning journey. And I tried to kind of separate the two, but obviously they got intertwined. I mean, I was going through surgeries and testing. And at the time, I was really angry and really resentful that I couldn't just focus on planning my wedding, that we had all these other things to think about. We didn't know what the future was going to hold. I actually was trying on wedding dresses after I got a biopsy. And when we actually got married, I had only one breast because I was in between reconstruction. And the place where I got my wedding dress is a small little boutique shop in State College. They actually made me a pocket inside my dress to put like a prosthetic if I needed it. So they were amazing and they were very understanding. Obviously, it's the last thing you want to do and last thing you want to think about. And it really sucked, I'm not going to lie, but we did it. And we got married on our originally planned date. With one breast, I just did it.
Yeah, and I was just going to ask, to fight breast cancer, you had the double mastectomy and also reconstructive surgeries. But and then around the same time, you were working, you were planning your wedding, you were looking forward to your honeymoon, which are all stress inducing in their own way, although the stress might be very different kinds from each other. Why did you decide that you weren't just going to set aside those other things in life, the milestones that you mentioned, to treat your cancer first?
To be honest, it wasn't really ever a question, I think. When I was diagnosed, and we told my doctor at the time that we were planning our wedding, and we asked her, do we need to stop planning? And she said, I don't have any reason why you should stop planning your wedding. So we trusted her, and we thought, okay, well, if she's our doctor, she's the one that's going to do the mastectomy. She has looked at the biopsy. She has outlined our treatment plan. And if she's saying we should go ahead with the planning, then we will. And it was very hard. I mean, I was torn. I'm like, do we need to postpone this? Do we need to keep going? And I really think part of what helped me get through all that was knowing my wedding was coming up. And there was that bit of happiness inside all the sadness that was planning my wedding and knowing that it was coming up and it was giving me something to look forward to. It was hard for me to believe it was actually going to happen. But it did bring me joy to have that part. And so it was a lot of mixed emotions. It was, you know, everything you'd feel planning a wedding and also terrible things about dealing with cancer.
And like you mentioned, having a second cancer, it took a little bit of time to put two and two together. And because of the second cancer that you had, you took the genetic testing, which returned the result that you were one of about 400 people in the United States known to have Lenfermini syndrome, which is a genetic mutation that puts you at increased risk of cancers. Did you know about the syndrome before the testing?
No, I'd never heard of it before. Where I got treated in Hershey, when you're diagnosed at what they call a young age, they do recommend you see a genetic counselor. And we found out I did qualify for the Lenfermini test. You have to have certain qualifications, one of them being a personal history of like two or more cancers by the age of whatever. I qualified for the testing for that. And we still were like, no, that sounds really bizarre. You know, I did come back positive for it. And after all the testing came back, I was found to have it everywhere, the most recent one being my skin, but blood, tissue, and skin, which puts me at an increased risk for a lot of cancers. So yeah, we were very shocked. Part of me was relieved. I'm like, well, we have an answer to why I keep getting cancer. But then the other half of me was like, well, what does this mean for the future? So is this something I have to worry about forever? And pretty much the answer is yes. And it just becomes a new normal for you, I guess. I just started working in my cancer screenings and my doctor's appointments into my normal life. They're not at all easy and it's not at all fun. And I've been doing it now for it's almost 8 years of the regular cancer screenings and doctor's appointments. It's a lot to keep up with and it's very stressful and I feel like I'm always at the doctor. But I also know at this point in time, this is the only way we believe is how you manage this disease, I guess, if you will.
Yeah. And one of the things that you mentioned was just getting this very regular testing that goes through screening regularly to keep an eye on your health. But I guess on the other side, mentally, how do you come to the understanding of how the symptom, the syndrome would actually impact you for your life?
That's a good question. We did have some serious discussions about what to do about starting a family, because at that point we didn't have kids. We wanted to have kids. And we had lots of conversations with all my doctors, with the genetic counselor, with my therapist at the time, and family conversations. And we learned that there's a 50% chance of me passing on the syndrome, Leigh-Ferrini syndrome, if I were to have a biological child. So my husband and I decided to adopt. It was the best thing that ever happened to us. My daughter is now almost 5. And in addition to the screenings and the conversation about starting a family, we just kind of moved forward. And after the wedding and after the honeymoon and after the Leigh-Ferrini syndrome diagnosis, there wasn't any discussion about not moving forward. I found another job. I continued to work. We just kind of lived our life, which we're still doing now.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Marjorie Miller, a writer and editor at Penn State and a 2-time cancer survivor. She has a genetic mutation that increases her risk of getting cancer and does advocacy work to raise awareness for cancer survivors. You have been very open in talking about the reality of what happens after cancer. You write about having anxiety, depression, and PTSD. You continue to attend physical therapy to handle chronic pain, which is sort of in contrast of this certain idea of recovery for cancer survivors, one that they should be better or healed at some point, which you really don't agree with. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, and I'm glad that you brought this up because I feel very passionately about this, both for myself and other people. You know, when you have cancer and you're going through the treatments and the surgeries, you and your doctors and everyone around you, you're focused on getting better, and that's 100% how it should be. I feel there's very little talk about life after cancer, and it could be a combination of just different things, the way it's portrayed in the media, or just depending on your cancer and your treatment. But there's not a lot of talk about life after cancer and how to deal with the long-term effects. One example was after I had my leukemia treatment. I had 3 years of chemotherapy for that. My doctors at the time, my oncologists, were a team of oncologists, and they said that children surviving cancer is a newish thing. Many years ago, children died of leukemia. So we don't have a lot of knowledge about what happens in adulthood, you know, and they recommended I get a bunch of follow-up tests throughout life, checking my heart, checking liver, kidney, all these things that could have been affected by the chemo, checking my brain, stuff like that. And I did keep up with that for a while, and now it's incorporated back into my care now. But I never really dealt with that the emotional aspects of the leukemia. And I went to high school, I went to college, I lived my life. And then the breast cancer came along. And I was still just trying to figure out my effects from the leukemia treatment, you know. So, you know, my doctor at the time with the breast cancer had said, you know, I encourage you to plan your wedding and to, you know, and so we planned our wedding, we had our wedding, we went on our honeymoon, I went to work again, eventually we adopted my daughter, and there was never really any pause. Like, yes, I recovered after each surgery, you know, but I just kept moving on, and there was not really, I mean, there was talk between my husband and I about how I was feeling and stuff, but there was not really any discussion about just long-term anxiety, the emotional toll it takes on you, and then the physical toll. Immediately after my mastectomy, I had a physical therapist who helped with just getting the mobility back in my arm from after the mastectomy. When you take out lymph nodes, you need to relearn how to do a lot of things with the affected arm. So I had that immediately, and that was successful. But then as the years went on, I was still having all this back pain and all this other pain, and nothing was wrong with my implants. It was just that through so many surgeries and all the pain I had during those surgeries, my posture was all messed up. I was just hunched over. My implants were just a little heavy. There was nothing wrong with them, but everything just hurt. And this was years later. And so I started physical therapy. I started doing all these things, which I still do now. And I lift weights. I work out. I have an acupressure mat, a foam roller, see a chiropractor. I do all those things, but I still have upper back and neck and kind of chest pain. And nobody really prepared me for that, or even if that was going to be something that was normal. And as the years went on, and I think, you know, after I became a mother, my anxiety just increased. I had a full-time job. Or I still have a full-time job. A new baby. Everything kind of happened really fast. And I was getting all these screenings and getting anxious before each breast MRI and all this stuff. And just felt like this is all too much, like just so many things to deal with. And my anxiety just got really bad. I got back into therapy and got on some medication. But it's something I deal with every day. And I guess I want people to know that there's no place after cancer where you're fine or you're okay. I kept feeling like I was going to get to a certain place where I would feel like a new version of myself or just some version of normal. And I guess I kind of got to that. But I kept thinking one day my back pain would go away, or one day I'd be less anxious, or I would feel okay now almost 8 years after the breast cancer. But honestly, that's not the case. I never really got to a place where I'm, quote, better. It's just a new normal, a new way of living. And once I accepted that and I wasn't trying to push myself to be a certain way or to be at a certain place that I thought I was supposed to be, it was very freeing. So I don't know if other cancer patients or survivors can relate, but as a survivor myself, I want people to know if you're not where you think you are, where you think you should be, that's okay, because everybody's different.
And in connection to that, you also talk about how there's this ideal of a cancer survivor. Maybe that's someone who eats really healthily, runs marathons, and just really upbeat and positive, making the best of their lives after cancer. But you said that you didn't ask to become a hero or an inspiration just because you have survived cancer. Why do you think it's important to let people know that there isn't one certain way of being a cancer survivor?
Yeah, that's a really good one, too. I will admit, I took on that role shortly after the breast cancer. I had this survivor mentality. I started signing up for 5Ks and running, and eventually I did do a half marathon. And No fault to everyone around me, but everyone around me was like, you're amazing, you know, how are you doing? And I'm like, you know, I'm fine, I'm great, you know. Part of me, it was true. I wanted to show my body that I could do whatever I wanted after cancer. I wanted to take my life back, take my body back, and take my control back. But it started being not 100% authentic. I started just acting like I was a certain way or pretending I was a certain way and not really knowing that I was still in a lot of pain physically and emotionally, mentally, deep down. I mean, I'm still really scared and I'm still really hurt and I'm still really fragile. I think maybe partially people, if we've survived cancer, people expect us to, or we even expect ourselves to be thankful and grateful and we're so blessed, and we are. But I've learned that that doesn't mean you can't also be just sad at the same time. You can be happy and grateful that you are well, but you can also be angry about what happened to you. And I think I didn't put those together until recently. This is just how it is, and it's okay to feel that way. I'm just now beginning to talk about that and show that, and I hope other people feel comfortable enough to do that too. It doesn't mean that we're not brave or strong. It means we're living our authentic selves, and sometimes we're hurt.
I was just thinking about how you said that it's part of your life now. So does that mean in a way you're just making peace with the fact that, you know, these things happened, and maybe at least, I guess for you, there's a chance that they may happen again?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've generally made peace with it. It doesn't mean it's necessarily easy to make peace with that. But I also just have a really strong family and support system, which I think helps a lot, with friends and family who care about me a lot and who kind of keep me going and help lift me up. And, you know, knowing my life is full of those types of people, and it's full of my daughter and my husband, you know, that helps me navigate better, and it helps me, you know, move forward. Because it can be paralyzing sometimes, you know, when you're waiting for a test result or something like that. It's like, until you have the result of your last MRI or something, you don't know, you know, well, what did it say? Or until you have your blood test results, you know, you do get scared, and you kind of get into this, like, your world stops for a second until you know that it's okay, and then you wait for the next test. And it's a horrible way to live. I mean, I'll be honest. But in a way, you get used to it. You make the best of it. You make some adjustments. And yes, I have in the back of my mind, I could get sick again. But I try to, I live with the knowledge that I have now. And the knowledge that I have now tells me, you know, I'm not sick.
I think that's a great attitude. Last year, you had a precancerous polyp removed. You described Leframini syndrome as a deep, dark woods after that happened. You said it never loosens its grip. It's sneaky, and you're never out of it, ever. And because of the chance of you having another cancer in your lifetime is still high, you had to do all the difficult things like making out a will and designating guardians for your daughter. Mm-hmm. I think at this point, do you find yourself still optimistic, more or less, in your life? Or sometimes it just gets pessimistic in general?
I think, generally speaking, for the most part, I am optimistic about the future and about my health. When I have little scares like that about the polyp, that makes me feel like I'm like, is it ever going to, you know, the woods, is it ever going to end? And I do remember writing that after that was for my blog, right? I do remember writing that after the colonoscopy. At first I was like, are you serious? I go every 2 years, how could it have grown so fast? And then I'm like, oh yeah, this is why I do this. You know I have Leframini syndrome, and that's why I'm getting these screenings. And colon cancer is one of the cancers associated. And even with all that, and even with all that we've been talking about and, you know, dealing with this syndrome, I still was surprised they found something. You know, I'm glad they found it, and I'm glad they took it out, and I'm going to continue to have them every 2 years. But I was surprised about that. And at that time, that was very upsetting to me, because it's not like I forgot I had Leframini syndrome, and it's not like I forgot why I got those screenings. It was just kind of just a rude reminder that, yeah, this can happen, and this is why we're doing this. And it does feel like you're in a woods, because there really isn't an end of anything. So, I mean, it's kind of a mixed bag. I mean, I hate that I have to do that, but at the same time, it's the only way that I can live, you know, so.
And you are now an active advocate as part of the Young Survivor Coalition and Pennsylvania Breast Cancer Coalition. You also serve as an advisor for the Student Pink Zone organization here at Penn State. Why is it important, especially during your advocacy work, to talk to young women about breast cancer?
Talking to young women about breast cancer was something I immediately felt passionate about as soon as I was diagnosed. Because I was so shocked. My doctors were so shocked. Everyone was so shocked. We were all shocked. We're like 26 is super young. And everyone being shocked, even my doctors, told me something. You know, we're not talking about this enough. We're not aware of this enough. And so I started researching things online, and I found the Young Survival Coalition. Through them, I have done some bike rides, Tour de Pink. And then just recently, my other friend and I started a local support group here for the Young Survival Coalition. And I've since, in all those years, met a lot of other young women. Three, also with Lee-Fermini syndrome, through the organization. Yep. Because I didn't want to feel alone anymore. And so I reached out and I got involved. And then with the Pink Zone and all these other organizations and started meeting more people. And, you know, both unfortunately and fortunately, the breast cancer community is large. There are a lot of us because breast cancer is common, which is terrible. But there are a lot of us to be there for each other. And I don't want any other young woman to feel like she doesn't have anyone to talk to or can't talk about, you know, mastectomies and breast reconstruction and all that kind of stuff when she's dealing with breast cancer. So that was one of the reasons I wanted to get involved and speak to young women, let them know that this could happen. It does happen. It's very rare. But if they are aware of it, they, you know, if they find something, they can talk to their doctors and they shouldn't feel like they're too young for breast cancer. They should always be their own advocate, you know. And I think hopefully by hearing my story, they'll just have that awareness just in the back of their mind. And then also, like I said, to have that community, just to not feel that you're just so out of it and so alone, you know, at your time of diagnosis, if you're a young woman. So, you know, just to let other young women know it can happen. And if it does, I'm here, we're here.
Marjorie, thank you so much for joining us on Take Note.
Thank you for having me.
Marjorie Miller is a writer and editor for Penn State's College of Health and Human Development. A two-time cancer survivor, she was diagnosed with leukemia at the age of 12 and with breast cancer at 26. Through genetic testing, she discovered she has Lee-Fermini syndrome, a mutation that increases her chance of getting cancers. Now in her 30s, Miller has gone through chemotherapy, a double mastectomy, breast reconstruction surgeries, and lives a healthy lifestyle while coping with the long-lasting effects of her cancers. She volunteers and speaks about her personal experience to raise awareness for cancer survivors. This year's National Cancer Survivors Day is this Sunday. You can listen to more Take Note interviews on wpsu.org/take note. I'm Min Qian, WPSU.